Thanks for having me, April.
So we should note that the first professional team to bring their practices to a halt was actually the Detroit Lions, refusing to practice to protest Jacob Blake's shooting. Do you feel like the Lions were on the leading edge in starting something?
They were, and it, you know, the cynic would say it's about time they were first at something, but no, it really was. It was a pretty powerful moment there Tuesday in Allen Park. The Lions had a mandatory off day on Monday and showed up for work Tuesday, and they have had some pretty deep and personal and powerful conversations amongst themselves virtually through their off season. You know, they weren't together until recently when training camp started for the NFL here in August, but they had a lot of talks, a lot of conversations as a team about race and injustice and, you know, in the wake of the George Floyd murder. And here they were Tuesday showing up for work and, you know, quick pulse, check of the pulse by the coaches and some of the veteran players. And they realized, you know what, it's not about football today. And so they went ahead and they just had a team meeting where there were more stories shared, more, you know, some personal stories that guys hadn't even shared, you know, with friends and family, let alone teammates. And at the end of that, you know, practice was supposed to be at 10:30, and here they were a few hours later. They came marching out in mass with, you know, wheeling out a whiteboard with the messages of, you know, this can't go on, and refused to practice. It was a joint decision, though, and that's what we've seen then since. You know, it was sort of a symbolic move, but it was also one that I think caught people's attention across the sports world, and we saw that last night play out in the NBA. Certainly things happened in Kenosha even after the Lions came out and did what they did to sort of compel some of these decisions. But certainly they were a bit of a trendsetter, if you will.
Coach Matt Patricia supported them, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And he that's one of the things the players have. I mean, I think the coaching staff has done a good job with the Lions and just giving guys space to talk about things other than football. And the team has bonded in ways that some teams don't bond by doing some of these things. And so I think the coaching staff realizes there's a lot more going on in these guys' lives and the feelings they're having now, especially you've got a locker room that's, you know, or a league that's 2/3 African-American. It matters.
You know, I almost choked on my coffee when I was listening to the statement that the Milwaukee Bucks released, demanding that the Wisconsin legislature return and debate police reform and pass some legislation. I am hard-pressed to think of a time when I've heard an American sports team get that specific about politics.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. I mean, it's been a tough year for the stick-to-sports crowd.
Right.
Starting with the pandemic and then particularly the last few months on the subject of racial justice. I mean, athletes have really found their voice, and at least in the pro ranks, they've started to understand the power they wield. They have a labor union. They have these powers that are vested in them by the salaries they make and so on and so forth. But this is different. And I think it is partly due to the pandemic. These leagues and owners are desperate to salvage billions in TV revenue out of their seasons. And so I think the players realize they've rarely had this kind of leverage. And they've never had the platform like players do today with social media and other outlets. But absolutely. I mean, you had the Milwaukee Bucks. They were in, you know, discussions about should we play, should we not play. They've got some personal stories in that locker room, players who have had issues with police brutality specifically. And so it hits home, certainly it's 40 miles from Milwaukee, Kenosha. So they're in the bubble. They're feeling like they should be back home in some cases, but they're also, I mean, like you said, they were on the phone with the attorney general, I believe, from Wisconsin. I mean, they were on talking next steps. What can we do? What should we do? How do we make some of these protests actionable? And so you're seeing that, and now on a larger scale with the NBA teams. The rest of the NBA team spent last night and early Thursday here talking about what next. Do we play? Do we not play? And the idea being, what's next? How do we turn this into action instead of just saying, you know what, enough's enough?
I know you're not a politics reporter, but do you think the Bucks are going to get any traction?
I do. I mean, look, again, like I said, this will widen some divides, certainly, when you talk about politics and, you know, the Black Lives Matter. I mean, they've had changes have been notable, especially in the NBA, which has always been a more progressive league. You know, once they started their bubble in Disney to resume their season, you had Black Lives Matter painted on the courts and the players' jerseys and making some social statements that way. But you've already got three owners pledging in the NBA pledging $10 million apiece over the next decade to fund racial and social justice initiatives. I mean, you've also had last night the DeVos family, which owns the Orlando Magic, putting out a statement condemning bigotry and racial injustice and police brutality.
We should say that DeVos family that has also been deeply involved in Republican politics
absolutely.
In the Trump era.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, certainly the Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, is a part owner there. Jared Kushner was given TV interviews this morning chiding NBA players and their privilege, which I think I'm sure the players found rather rich, no pun intended. But I mean, his brother is a minority owner of the NBA team in Memphis. So there's a lot of layers and certainly plenty of conflicting interests. But and you also have the backdrop of the Republican National Convention where, you know, the vice president is on there and making statements that I'm sure did not sit well with those guys in Orlando trying to decide whether they want to continue to play. But then you also have the general public and a lot of people, as you mentioned off the top, that want sports just to be entertainment and a diversion. And it is most decidedly not those things right now. And it probably won't be for some time.
John, you don't have to scratch very deeply below the surface of professional sports to find that the wealth of white owners and many white ticket holders is what holds up many leagues in sports that are primarily played by black athletes. Is some of this an overdue bill that you think might end up getting paid?
Paid in some ways, I think definitely. I mean, you've already had, irony of yesterday's sort of wildcat strike that we saw in the NBA was that it came 4 years to the day after Colin Kaepernick sort of his protests.
He first took the knee, yeah.
He first became public. I mean, he'd been doing them a little bit before people noticed. But so there was that. I mean, and in the players' minds, it's okay. 4 years later, you know, what have we gained? Where have we gotten? I think that's some of the frustration that's boiling over right now. But again, like I said, I think they're also realizing that now they have a voice, and certainly the financial implications of some of these decisions. I mean, you can talk about privilege, but you can also talk about, I mean, these guys, yes, those are big salaries these guys have, but they're also big salaries that they're willing to forfeit in a lot of cases, it appears. So I think they're realizing the power of their, not only of their unions, but of their profile. And it's not going to stop. I mean, these things, like, you have to go back, I think, honestly, to the 1960s and, you know, whether it was, you know, the Olympic protest or even some of the formation of these unions, players' unions and these pro leagues to find a time that feels quite like this. And I think that's probably true in society at large, but certainly the players are no different than the rest of us in that sense.
John Neo of the Detroit News. John, quite the week. Thank you for talking it over with us.
You're welcome. Thanks. And it's not over yet, April.
This is true.